Hello, everybody, and welcome to an incredibly special edition of Truth and Justice. We have just had what me, the professional fireman, considers to be a landmark ruling in the West Memphis 3 case. But since you guys all know that I'm not a lawyer, I brought not one, but two of the best attorneys that I know of onto the show to discuss the ruling we just got. And what I'm talking about is in the West Memphis 3 case. You guys remember this has been an ongoing saga for us since 2018. The Truth and Justice Army has been working on this and fighting to get DNA testing done in the West Memphis 3 case. In 2023, we were shot down. 2022, we were shot down by the circuit court in Arkansas, and they denied the testing. We've been appealing that all the way up to the Arkansas Supreme Court. And the Arkansas Supreme Court has now, just this week, reversed that ruling and remanded it back to the court. And here to break it all down with me from the Defense Diaries podcast, I have both Bob and Ali Mata. We've got a ton to talk about, so let's fucking go.
What's up, Bob? And what's up, y'all? Patrons, thanks for hanging with us. And I think at some point this will probably make it to your regular feed. So hello to y'all as well. Bob, after our last chat, you know, I thought it was time to bring Allie in. Like I had to bring in the big guns.
For sure. You know, so
I thought it would make sense to bring Allie in because I was actually driving back from Indiana. Because I was in Indianapolis last night, so Ali was reading. We were having a very detailed discussion about the ruling, and then we were digging into the prior rulings to try to see where this thing is falling, which we'll get into when we start talking about it.
Yeah. So, had you guys been tracking any of the stuff that's been going on with this case prior to this? Before I sent you this ruling?
Oh yeah.
I mean, but not so. Like I watched the. You know, the documentaries. I also love Eddie Vedder. So, you know, and then I did know that there
Eddie's
was
what sucked her into it.
Yeah.
No, I've been following this case since basically since Berlinger dropped, you know, his first doc. So right. Like that piqued my interest immediately. And after that, yeah, I've been following it intently. And then obviously I was following as your journey with the case began. And you know, it's always been one of those cases, man. It's one of the ones that sticks to the ribs, you know? So yeah, I'm fully aware of it. And Allison, as of today, I would say is far more, briefed on the subject matter considering our prep coming in. So.
Yeah. And this is huge for us. So I picked the case up, as you mentioned, Berlinger and the Paradise Law series, you know, the murders happened of Stevie, Michael, and Christopher May 5th, 1993. So we're coming up on 31 years. 96 is when the first Paradise Lost came out. And there was this fight for years to get Damian, Jason, and Jesse released from prison. Amy Berg with West of Memphis picked it up and they helped push it over the finish line with amazing PIs like Rachel Geyser, who jumped into the fight. And as Allison mentioned, you know, you had Eddie Vedder, you had Johnny Depp, you had, you know, celebrity, everybody was in this fight. 2011, they were finally released on the Alford plea. And then things kind of went quiet in 2018, the Truth and Justice Army picked it back up and we kind of titled our season and the docuseries I put together, The Forgotten West Memphis 3, because it seemed like once the three were released, everybody forgot we still don't have justice for these three other victims. And that's what this fight has been about for us. And Damian and I have gotten real close over the years, you know, working towards that goal. And he eventually, once the docuseries came out, it put incredible pressure on the DA's office, and we struck while the iron was hot and filed the motion for DNA testing. We thought we you know, last summer we thought we were there. We, you know, Zach and I went down to West Memphis to be there for the hearing. We thought this was going to be it. We're going to get the new technology, the new testing. We're going to find out who killed these kids. And then we got denied, and that led us to now. So I'm going to kind of, one thing I want to touch on before we get into the merits and you guys break down the brief. From my understanding, and obviously I'm not a lawyer, but this is huge in the fact that there was interpretation of the language in the law going on when this ruling was denied. And one of the discussions I had with Damien's defense team on the day that we were denied was, we need to get clarification and get this. And Damien, part of a big part of his fight was, this isn't just about him. It's about all the other people that are wrongfully convicted in Arkansas too, that we needed to get this law changed or clarified. And the discussion back then was, if we can get a ruling from a higher court, from the Arkansas Supreme Court, that will become then legal precedent. Is that what just happened here?
So specifically on people who are, well, I guess what you did get is a ruling that, A, anyone who does an Alford plea can still take advantage of the post-conviction or habeas corpus relief acts. And also, although I think it's going to be a very, I don't know, maybe the people you've been dealing with know, but a very small kind of sector of defendants, of people who are not in custody. So that's the other thing. What they did change here, I don't know if it's a change, but the way they interpreted the law, because the point was, there's this, the habeas corpus relief is only supposed to be applicable to someone who is in custody. And that's how they have interpreted their laws as to other relief under the Habeas Corpus Act. So here the court said, no, when you're doing the actual innocence exception, the statute makes it clear that it's anyone who has been convicted. So it would be whether or not you are in custody does not matter. It's not a prerequisite. So in theory, it seems as though people who are looking for certificates of innocence, even though like their sentence is done and over, that they can get in the door, and people that did Alford pleas. Other than that, I don't think that it set. I think those are the precedents that it set. Those are the two things that it decided.
Ultimately, this hearing that it's getting remanded for is going to dictate what's going to happen moving forward. Because I had an inkling going into the big motion day. I remember when you guys were going into court that day, hopes were high. And I just had a feeling, you know, if the courts have a way jurisdictionally of not having to address merits and they can get out of it, they're gonna take advantage of it, which they did here, which is what Allie was talking about. You know, they strictly hung their hat on, look, this like habeas requires you to be in custody. You're not in custody, you're out. So like they never even got close to getting into the merits as to why or why not they will test the DNA. So that's what we're going to get now. So like whatever happens in this hearing, which I'm assuming is going to be a full-blown hearing, and that's what we'll start talking about in terms of kind of what the standard they're going to apply and determining, because we're still not out of the wood. This still isn't like they're testing the DNA. Like now we're back to kind of, we're back in the trial court.
As though
now
you guys had just driven down there. As though the day you guys went down the first.
Right. Yeah, and that was when I got, you know, Damien texted me right away, and you know, he was like, we're getting the testing. I was reading it and it was like, well, it's not exactly true. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to clarify this, is because the court didn't order that the testing be approved, because that was never ruled on. The original court said, essentially, you can't ask us to test the evidence because you're not in custody. That was the ruling. And now the precedent that has been set, which is the one we were referring to, is now the Arkansas Supreme Court has said, no, that is not what the law says. You do have the right to file this motion and go to court to request DNA testing, even when you're not in custody. And that was, and I love when I was reading through the motion, you know, there's a lot of talk about plain language. We had some of our listeners who were attorneys look at it, and even me as a layman looked at it, and it seemed like in the statute, it was very clear that it said, you know, you had all these requirements for habeas, and then said, or the word we kept talking about, you know, last year, the word or means a lot. It said, or if you're filing a claim of actual innocence. And I don't know how they ignored that. But so now that has been clearly established that the law, the court ruled that the language is plain. And so now it is remanded back to that court. So now they have to rule, they have to have a hearing and rule on the merits.
Correct. Yes, exactly.
And, you know, I don't know where you, why don't you let me know kind of where you want to start with the, either like the ruling or what you'd like us to focus on. So I don't just start going off or
you can go off.
Okay.
if you want to just go through the order.
Yeah, you want to start, baby? You want me to?
Why don't you start and I'll jump in as needed.
Okay. So here's, we kind of touched on all the things that made up most of this order, which is just technical things about whether or not Damon even had the ability to go into court and seek relief. So there is nothing in the actual holding that speaks to what they should find or the strength of the motion, just the fact that he is not barred from bringing it, not barred by the fact that he entered a guilty plea pursuant to Alford, which is a certain type of plea where you get to maintain your innocence. Because typically, if you had, pled guilty, you cannot come into court and assert your actual, your actual innocence. You'd have to first go vacate your guilty plea, and that would never happen. So once we get through all of that, the court essentially just says that that he's allowed to get heard. And the problem that I see here, what scares me the most, is actually in the dissent. So when you, and I'm assuming that you guys have, you, Bob, and, Damian's team have looked at that. And let me just touch on that real quick, because
I did. Yeah.
Right. So not only was I kind of irritated about it, I found the closing words pretty shocking. Mm. But the important part here, the only part that matters that touches on what happens moving forward, is it deals with the standard that he, being Damian, will have to reach when he goes back into court. And actually, I might as well read from the statute here. It says that he has to identify a theory of defense, which, all right, some other guy did it, and then that would establish the actual innocence of the person in relation to the offense being challenged. But then they have a second, more detailed requirement that the proposed testing of the specific evidence may produce new material evidence that would raise a reasonable probability that a person making a motion under this section did not commit the offense. So now we're going to go back to the dissent. Now, a dissent is when one or more judges of the that are part of the panel don't agree with the majority, don't agree with the actual holding in the case. So what the judges, and there were, what did I say, Bob? Three of them?
It was a 4-3 count.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
4-3 count.
Three judges.
Two of the same.
Right. Three judges took this position, that an inmate who brings a petition for a writ of habeas corpus must present a prima facie case that identity was an issue before trial. Now, that we've addressed and is no longer going to be a thing, because the judge said his Alford plea doesn't, well, technically, because the judge, what the court said is that it's not a foregone conclusion that just because he entered an Alford plea by way of a guilty plea, that he can't say that identity wasn't an issue at trial. So I guess when I say there's only one thing in the dissent that matters, it's still possible that whether or not identity was an issue at trial is something he'll be able to establish is still on the table. Because again, all the majority said was, well, it's not a foregone conclusion that he is unable to. So he has to have his hearing. And the court in this case said that it wasn't at issue. In the dissent, but I guess I digress. I want to get to the juice here.
All of us, I think that it's safe to say that everybody that is in this particular stream with us desperately thinks that this evidence needs to be tested. That the only way to get any kind of inkling of justice in this case is test the damn evidence, right? I mean, like, that's just common sense to me. You know, you'll have people on the other side arguing, well, you know, what happens if they consume all the DNA? Well, in the eyes of those folks, they already think that the case has been fully adjudicated. They think by way of Damien and Miss Kelly and Baldwin all making an Alford plea and saying, okay, we're pleading guilty, that it's been fully adjudicated. So, like, they can't have it both ways. They can't then turn around and say, oh, well, we're concerned about, you know, consuming all the DNA with this testing in the event that the technology continues to develop and it gets even more powerful. You know, I mean, which is it? Do you have these guys right, and you're satisfied that they're the guilty ones because they took an Alford plea because they wanted to get the hell out of jail? You know, that thing is like what I call a Hobson's choice. It's no choice at all. You know, and you know that we had Baldwin fought that. He fought the Alford plea for a long time, man. It, like, he was not down with that deal. You know, I mean, he wanted to kind of stretch it out, you know, and that's what's going to happen when you have three defendants. You know what I'm saying? I mean, right, each person's an individual. Each is allowed to feel how they want to feel about it. And each has different attorneys that are saying, all right, look, man, these are the pratfalls. You know, these are the possible issues moving forward. And Baldwin was always of the sense that, like, I'm concerned how an Alford plea will affect us moving forward. I want to show that I'm actually innocent, that I didn't do this shit. You know what I mean? So that created the problem. So I don't want people to be concerned that we're being pessimistic. What we're doing is we're preparing everybody for what's going to go down in this court when this hearing takes place. And what Allison's trying to tell you is this dissent is going to be what, because we already know that the trial court does not want this shit tested. Okay. We know that. And yes, they hung their hat on the easiest way to avoid it was the jurisdictional. We don't have jurisdiction over the case anymore. You're not in custody. Habeas is improper. Boop. Bye. Now they're going to have to get to the merits of it in this, and what Allison's telling you is this dissent is going to tell you exactly what the trial court most likely will come with.
If they're inclined to
deny the testing again, you know? Right. So, I mean, well, his attorneys know this, you know what I mean? They're going to be looking at it. They're going to be countering it. Well, so I just want to make clear, because I saw some, you know, but, like, we have to be pragmatic.
Don't read comments while you're recording that. But Bob, I'm sorry, Bob Ruff. I was kind of reading it from another screen, so I didn't realize you had pulled it up. So why don't I let you read some parts and then I'll speak to it?
Yeah, and one thing that I wondered is, as far as the dissent, it's in there. Is that something that could be referenced by as part of the case when it goes back down to the trial court? Can they reference?
Absolutely. Now, it would be different if that. So here's what I did. And that's why I kind of wanted to let you kind of tell everyone first. Then I was going to kind of talk about what I did and why. But if the majority had spoken on this issue, then not necessarily. If they had said he kind of meets the, we think that there's enough here that could, have a reasonable probability to show he didn't commit the crime, which, by the way, is a very low standard, reasonable probability. Right.
But I want to flush that more, babe. Like, when we get down.
Well,
like,
I know he's got this highlighted. I'm just answering some of Bob's questions.
Yeah. So let me buzz through real quick a couple of things I found in the dissent, and we'll go through it. Obviously, I have my bias. I wasn't thrilled at all with the dissent. They basically brought up, I believe, three different issues in the dissent. One of which I think is just a bullshit argument. Essentially, they're saying that, as you mentioned, Allison, that, you know, identity wasn't an issue. They say that DNA wasn't used in the first trial, so DNA shouldn't be able to be used now to prove his innocence. Which I think, you know, so one of the things to kind of tab and think about for a minute is, you know, the first trial was vacated. Like, that's not in my layman view, like, it shouldn't be part of this case at this point. It was that conviction is gone. And then, so now they're saying that the Alford plea then takes the place, because they pled guilty, that takes the place of the trial. But the, almost ignoring, like, the fact that the Alford plea is the Alford plea because of the distinction that they are maintaining their innocence. They're saying, we didn't do this, but we think that there's enough evidence that, you know, that we don't want to risk
jury going could find us guilty. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, they've maintained their innocence. So that was part of it. I'm scrolling.
And on that one, there, the court covered that, like I said, as far as saying it's not a bar. And, you know, I don't think that their ruling on that issue really should be carried too much weight with the circuit court kind of to rely on that, because I think that the majority's opinion sort of goes against that to a certain extent. So I'm not sure that, but it was this actual innocence argument, that's where obviously my fear comes in.
Yeah, right. If you're watching.
In my opinion, you guys, the only thing that the Supreme Court settled was whether or not, in a situation that's similar to this, in that, like, for instance, you have an Alford plea guy who's like, look, I pled guilty, but I'm still trying to prove my actual innocence, that they're not barred from coming into court. Whereas prior to this getting kicked back down, they were. So the Supreme Court has sounded off on that. It's, even though it was a 4-3 ruling, that's now the law of the land, at least in Arkansas. And like, right, Allison had said that, which I did not know, that they adopted their habeas statute from ours in Illinois.
The one for ours DNA in Illinois.
Yeah, as far as the DNA testing is, in ours is pretty stringent. You know,
right.
it's one of the things that you have to wonder how much politics plays into. You know, I mean, we're all searching for the truth here. You know, like, when you're sitting there just objectively and stripping all the laws away, and you're like, God damn, man, don't we just want to know the truth? Like, in what world don't we test everything we can test to try to get to the truth? You know, and that's the frustrating thing about our system of justice, is there's so many roadblocks, it seems.
Right.
Especially if you're just a person's like, are you kidding me? Like, why wouldn't you test the shit? You know,
right. And
Allison. Right.
That's the issue that I mean, I'm disgusted personally, again, admittedly, as a layman with a bias. By the dissenting opinion, the way it's, you know, the opening lines of it are that it, you know, just cuts against the finality of justice, that we're maintaining our innocence. I've got highlighted on the screen, if you're watching live, part where they're talking about actual innocence in the dissent. It says Eccles' first conviction did not rest on DNA evidence, and no such evidence was presented in subsequent trial because he chose to enter a guilty plea. And I have highlighted
chose is a very liberal use of the word chose.
Right.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. How are you feeling about your social battery right now? Is it fully charged, feeling drained, bursting with energy? I've had times in my life where I just can't find that social balance that I need, either because I'm sitting at home through the winter and not socializing enough, or sometimes I'm socializing too much and not setting good boundaries. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially now with social gatherings picking up after winter. We're quickly approaching grad party and wedding season. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've worked through these exact issues in therapy in the past, and it made a huge difference in my life. My therapist finally convinced me years ago that sometimes it's okay to say no. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you're not meshing well, you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/truth today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/truth.
I copied and pasted your red part to Bob when I read it, and I was like, wow.
Yeah, so what I have here on red is, in reaching its decision, the majority ignores common sense and basic legal principles to embark on a fruitless endeavor to exonerate a depraved murderer. That's what the dissent wrote. And I have it highlighted in red as opposed to yellow like the rest of the screen, because I was just like, what the fuck? Like, why? Like, if that's not bias in the case bleeding right into the pages, like there was no reason for that. They're not ruling on law. I mean, they're attacking Eccles in that.
But I would go up, Bob, and read to them that your whole little middle section there, because that's where everything kind of boils down to, like on 17 above where you are, right there, that one paragraph, read the whole thing.
This one here that starts with here.
Yep.
So it says here, additional DNA testing would not prove Eccles' innocence. Importantly, Eccles' first conviction did not rest on DNA evidence, and no such evidence was presented at a subsequent trial because he chose to enter a guilty plea. The jury was presented with evidence that Eccles knew facts about the case that were not public knowledge. Fibers found on the victim's clothes were microscopically similar to clothing found in Eccles' home. Multiple witnesses testified that Eccles confessed to the murders, and multiple witnesses placed him near the crime scene at the time of the murders. Given this evidence, testing the ligatures for another person's DNA would not prove Eccles' innocence.
So that's the scariest part that Bob and I were saying. We fear that if the trial court is inclined to not want to grant this, they might hang their hat on. But I don't think that that's even an end-all be-all, because it seems very clear to me that the Supreme Court has been keeping the circuit court in check about this issue since, I don't know, 2010 and even before that, with everything having to come to them. So I went back and I looked at what he has to establish, which we discussed earlier. He has to show this reasonable probability that the, you know, evidence will demonstrate that he's actually innocent. And an argument that the circuit court could clearly say, we 100% agree with the opinion of the dissent, that even if new DNA comes back, even if they could go even further and say, even if more DNA comes back and it pinpoints the stepfather or the friend or whatever you're hoping that it will do, that could just mean that someone else committed the offense with him, or that DNA was already there. And with all this overwhelming evidence of guilt, which is what the dissent is saying, and then calling him a depraved murderer, they could say that. But I think if the majority agreed with that opinion, they would not have gone out of their way to open up the line for testing here, and they would have spoken on this issue. Now, the fact that they remained completely silent on the issue
that's,
is also
that's not helpful.
Right.
Before we keep, I just want to make sure that everybody out there, because like we've kind of dove in. So everyone understands from the forefront of this, this is not, go ahead and test the DNA. That what came down from the Supreme Court of Arkansas is not test the DNA. So what has happened is I just want to restate this just so we're all on the same page as we kind of progress through, because Allie jumped into what Damien's attorneys are going to need to establish in order to get the court to agree to allow the testing. So just, I want to make sure that everybody understands where we stand right now. This has just been The trial court's decision to bar him from being able to get to the merits of it based on the jurisdictional issue of the habeas corpus filing is no longer an issue. So now they're back to when Bob stepped into the courtroom on that day, and everyone was so eager and excited about the prospect of getting the DNA tested. So that's we're back to square one as far as that's concerned. So the arguments that should have taken place that day will now be taking place the next time it's up. All right. So that's where we're at. I just want everyone in the chat and that's watching just to be clear that that's where we are. And now, like what Allison was talking about, because Allison's incredibly brilliant and she talks in legalese. I try to be her translator. All right. So like, I try to translate what Allie's saying. Cause she's a lawyer. I'm a lawyer too, but she always speaks in legalese. I can speak in lay people. You know what I'm saying? So basically where we're at is the standard. And I want to go through it more thoroughly, Allie, because that's really what everything is going to rely on. Because you and I were having a lot of conversations on my drive back. You know, it's an interesting proposition because of the fact that there's an Alford plea out there that he's not asking for a new trial, that he's simply trying to get a full exoneration. He's trying to prove that he's actually innocent. So it's like it's the same analysis, but it's different in reality. We're like, it's kind of like a legal fiction where we're pretending like he's trying to get a new trial again, but he's not really. He's just trying to prove his actual innocence.
And to be clear, at this point, he hasn't even asked for a new trial. What he's asked for is the opportunity to test the evidence to see if they can find the evidence to then ask for a new trial or then ask for the conviction to be overturned. I want to touch real quick on this little bit that we just talked about, the dissent, and then we'll take off on the rest of these standards and stuff that you're talking about. See, for me, somebody who's obviously I spent 5 years studying and research and investigating this case. That paragraph that I read, that's their basis for saying that the DNA will not prove his actual innocence, was laughable to me if that's the argument they can come up with. I mean, the things that they brought up that are the reasons why they know he's innocent, that because there was fibers found that were microscopically similar. That's there was future testing. First of all, fiber evidence is basically junk science as it begins with. There was future testing done that showed that actually they can confirm those fibers did not match. Like so it doesn't matter if they thought they were similar back in 1994.
It's a terrifying proposition to know that the primary piece of evidence was some bullshit fiber thing. It's like fiber's worse than like bite mark comparison or back in the old days when they compared two hairs, not by DNA, just by like, hey, these hairs look really similar. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, because like, Bob, you're going to be making the same argument that I was making with Allison, which is theoretically, had his defense counsel had the ability to test the DNA back then, and had they been able to bring it up during the case in chief, on the defense's case in chief, obviously the power of that DNA profile being someone else's entirely would have been incredibly powerful evidence and most likely would have ended up in an acquittal. You know, so it's like,
And the rest of that. The rest of it, the two other elements, there were multiple witnesses that placed him near the scene. They've all recanted since then and said they were lying about it. Plus, there was, you know, contradictory evidence even that presented at trial that showed that he was somewhere else at the same time. Same thing with the witnesses that said that he had confessed to it. Like none of that evidence exists anymore. And as far as the DNA proving, you know, my audience paid for. We did a fundraiser. We sold shirts, raised the money, and we paid for a DNA expert to be testifying at that trial or at that hearing, which she never got to actually testify. But the reason for that is because, you know, I had already during the filming of the documentary and more since then did the defense team work with her. You know, she analyzed the case and determined the reason they went for the ligature testing was that is the most likely. You can't tie those knots and not leave your skin cells all over those knots. They were protected. She believed, and she was going, I can't put words in her mouth, but my interpretation was she was going to go on that court and testify that whoever killed those boys and tied those knots, there we should be able to find their DNA. If we find their DNA and those, that's most likely going to be your perpetrator. So this, so that, to me, that was an incredibly weak argument for them to make that, oh, it's because of fibers that have been disproven, witnesses that have recanted, and DNA wouldn't prove anything. I don't think those hold up in, you know, if they try to make those arguments in court. And the last thing I want to point out,
I want you to, I want you to say to Bob exactly what you said.
I will let him say his last.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say before I'll turn it back over to you is another thing that we need to consider is we have a new district attorney now. So we had Ellington, who has fought this for years and years and years. He was, and there was a whole, my audience knows this drama. He, after the documentary, agreed to the testing, told us, I have an email where he said he was packaging it and sending it to be tested. Literally asked for FedEx numbers from the lab ready to test it. Then he got appointed to be a judge, ghosted us for months. Cressman takes over, tells us, yeah, we're good with the testing. Then he ghosts for months, and then they claimed they couldn't find it. Then they claimed all the evidence had been destroyed, the stuff that Ellington had told us was being packaged. There was a lawsuit. There was FOIA requests. Mara Leverett did an incredible job of digging into that to prove that it wasn't. Eventually, we found it in the evidence room, shockingly enough. So the Damien's defense was able to go in and physically see that there. And then Cressman, who had said, you know, that office had told us leading all the way up to this, we're going to let you do the testing, then went into court and was fighting it tooth and nail, and it got punted to here. But now we have a new DA that took over just January 2023, Sonia. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, but it's Fontasilia. I'm sorry, Mrs. District Attorney.
You'll know it after the next court date, Bob. You know,
right, when it'll be all over the news. But we
just say the AG or the DA if she's the actual.
But we do have a new district attorney that is not connected to the old guard, as far as I know. Because a lot of this has just been the incestuous thing that we see in a lot of DA's offices. We're once protecting the one before and protecting the one before. I don't think we have those connections. We have a new district attorney. So my hope is, because the district attorneys are the gatekeepers of the evidence. They're the gatekeepers of truth and justice and keeping their people safe. As Bob so eloquently put earlier, like, just test the fucking evidence. Like, that, who wouldn't want to test it? So my sincere hope is that this new district attorney would just put to bed all of this and just file just go in with a joint motion with them and say, yes, let's just test it. Let's stop this.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
And that would be amazing, man.
It would be. And as cynical as I am, I have no reason yet for this district attorney to think that she would be working to block the evidence. So I'm hoping amongst hope that she is reasonable and she will just join in the motion and we'll get this testing done.
That does sound good. I was going to ask you about that because I tried to find a lawsuit.
Best case scenario.
Yeah,
definitely.
So with that said, I'll let you guys then take it away from here and talk about what else we have. If that's not the case, because that's, as you said, that's best case scenario, but based on this ruling and stuff, and we have to go, if we have to move forward and continue fighting for this, I'll let you guys take it away from there.
So I went back to look at what the judge held. So essentially they had a very similar argument back in, what was that, 2010, when you guys were trying to get the new trial after they had agreed to do the testing. Mm-hmm. Was that around then, 2000? I know that.
Yeah,
I
wasn't connected to the case then, but yeah, that was leading up to the offer. Because like you had said earlier, every issue in this court when Ellington was in charge had to continually go all the way up to the Arkansas Supreme Court while they were saying no, no, no testing. And the Arkansas Supreme Court saying, yes, you need to do the testing. Yeah. So in 2010, that's what was going on.
Okay. So I'd hoped that there was going to be some argument of the majority's opinion on whether this evidence would, you know, be sufficient to establish some sort of actual innocence claim, something that would sort of counter what the dissent said. So I looked at it, and unfortunately, the issue then was whether or not there was compelling evidence of that compelling evidence that would have resulted in the defendant's acquittal. So it's a slightly different standard. It's higher compelling evidence, but to that there's material evidence, compelling material evidence that it's likely that he would not be convicted, meaning he'd be acquitted, meaning found not guilty, as opposed to reasonable probability that he is actually innocent, which is very different than them finding you not guilty, finding reasonable doubt, whatever the case may be. But what the court did discuss that I think would carry over and be in play here, even though it's slightly different, that for the new trial analysis, the judge is supposed to look at, you know, the other evidence. Now you're saying, and that's what kind of scares me here, that this court, the highest court in the land, who back in 2010 had received, their whole argument was that the judge wasn't considering all the new evidence when trying to decide if there was reasonable, if they had met their burden to establish that things might change in a retrial. He might be acquitted in a retrial. So they attached all that new evidence. And what the court said back then was, all right, the judge is wrong. She's not only supposed to look at the new DNA evidence compared alongside the other evidence of guilt, I want you to go back and also look at all the evidence of innocence that they have attached. There are 50 exhibits of innocence, which I'm assuming covered some of what you just discussed just now. And did that happen after 2010, or do you know when?
Some of it was leading into 2010. I mean, by then you had Hutchison's; they had recanted the fiber evidence, so a lot of that evidence had already been disproven leading up into that. And that's why the Alford plea happened, because the DA was just getting hammered from every stanchion of their case. When you started to put a microscope on it, just kept falling apart. So then they're doing this new DNA testing, which, as you know, if Damien Eccles was part of this murder,
why would he keep trying?
We should have found some of his DNA, but instead we keep finding other people's DNA and none of his anywhere on the case.
And why would he keep fighting to have the shit tested?
He's out. He's done. He got away with murder, if that were the case.
Theoretically, right. Why is he like it belies the fact that he's fighting so hard to get it tested that he's guilty. You know what I mean? Because theoretically,
if he's guilty, there might be evidence against him.
Right. It could be his shit in the ligatures. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so, but like what I wanted you to repeat, babe, was the kind of the notion of, like, the dissent and the majority opinion are a perfect example where you have theoretically, you know, two very intelligent sides. Okay. I mean, these are Supreme Court justices in Arkansas, right? So they've risen to the top of their profession in that state, and how they're looking at the exact same things, the same facts and evidence, and how two sides can come to completely different opinions. You've got this justice who penned that dissent referring to Damien Eccles, despite everything that's known and everything that's been out there for the past 20 plus years in terms of the movement to prove their innocence, still referring to him as a depraved murderer, you know, and citing the facts in which they were able to convict him on. You know what I'm saying? So you've got, like, It's a perfect example that this will never go away in the world that we live, where we could have, there's always going to be a person who says, oh, look, the sky is blue. And the person says, no, it's purple, looking at the exact same shit. And it's frustrating, but it's always going to be that way. And that's really the epitome of what the law is. You know, when you have two people looking at the exact same, whether it be statute, and they're interpreting it completely differently, whether it's evidence and they're interpreting, like, I, like Alice and I, when we're trying a case, we're obviously looking at the evidence in a completely different perspective than the prosecutors are. You know what I mean? Like, in every case, like always, it's like we're looking at the exact same evidence, but we have a completely different theory of what it means. You know what I mean? So it's like, I hope Bob, that what you're hoping, that this new DA or SA, whatever they are down in Arkansas, is new guard, and is like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to lie. I watched the Paradise Lost series. Like, yeah. I want to know myself. Okay. We've got this adjudication. These guys have all made Alfred pleas, but you know what? We have the opportunity to maybe give these families the true answer and maybe, just maybe, bring the actual culprits to justice. I think we take the shot and we do it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
can I ask you
real quick on that note before I forget it? Sorry, Ellie. As far as the family, that was one of the things cited in the dissent that pissed me off too, was they said they're going to open up all these wounds for the families of the victims, ignoring the fact that now Michael Moore's parents have always maintained that the three are guilty. That's a fact. Chris Byers, his mother is deceased, and now his adopted father is now dead. But at the time when I was working on the case, working on the docuseries and some Paradise Lost, for years has not only insisted that we do more testing, has filed lawsuits to get evidence collected. He wanted this testing done. He's since died in a car accident. Stevie Branches, his mother, Pam Hicks, she has expressly said she wants this testing done. If you want to watch the most heartbreaking scene of television you've ever seen in your life, watch her on my docuseries when she, with tears rolling down her face, saying she deserves to know who killed her son.
Yeah.
So for them to invoke the names of those parents as part of their excuse, knowing goddamn well that those parents want that testing done, is disgusting.
And that's actually what I was going to ask you about, if you knew the position, because I thought that maybe the victims, under the Victims' Rights Act, because most states have a Victims' Rights Act, that they could have maybe, did they
join the motion?
Right. But so you're saying that one of the parents tried and the state like fought them on it?
Yeah, this was back before I was part of the case, but they were fighting to get access to evidence, and the state was denying them access to the evidence. And if I'm remembering correctly, they actually ended up, Pam and Byers had filed a lawsuit to get access to the evidence. And they've both been very publicly over and over again have said they want this evidence tested. Now you have, even Terry Hobbs, who was Stevie's stepdad, in the most recent interview that I've seen with him. You know, when he was asked, do you think the evidence was tested? And his response was, well, test it all. It was an interview we conducted. We had George Jared record the interview with him because he wouldn't talk to me for something we did at CrimeCon. And he had told George, he's like, well, just, I'm okay with it if you just, how did he put it? Test it all. Be fair. Test all the evidence. Don't just test the ligatures. Test all the evidence. So even he hasn't said he doesn't want the testing done, technically right. speaking.
And he's the guy a lot of people like, you know what I mean?
Right.
A lot of people like Terry for this, and his buddy is the accomplice. But I mean, to me, at this point in time, you know, and when you guys were going in on that motion, that's what I kept saying to Allie. I'm like, there's got to be a way that you can get the victims' families on board with this, because they deserve to know the truth as well. This isn't just about Damian Eccles. This is about trying to find out who the hell did this. You know, if it's not these guys, and I'm convinced that they're not the guys. Like, that's just right.
Like you said, he would not be pushing to test evidence.
In theory, correct. But beyond that, it goes much deeper than that for me, in terms of, like, I mean, they were railroaded. You know, at the time, like, you have to, like, I don't know. Do you watch Paradise Lost?
Yeah, I forget a lot of the facts, but I remember being outraged.
Yeah, it was outrageous. That's why.
Well, the thing was, this all comes down to, and it's just become such, like, both sides, even beyond in the legal environment, even in social media and everywhere else, people have just dug their heels in so firmly into both sides. But the reality of the fact is, this was a misinterpretation of a crime scene, plain and simple. Their bodies were removed from that ditch. There were injuries on their body, which have since been overwhelmingly proven to be post-mortem animal predation. That's all it was. But their interpretation in that moment was that it was done by the killer It was during the height of satanic panic. They drew an incorrect conclusion that this was ritualistic, and that was their basis of the case. And some of they've never been able to say, you know what? Okay, we see all this evidence now. We misinterpreted the case, so let's go find the people that did it. And they've right. just never, ever been just willing to do that.
The most frustrating thing in the world.
Yeah. Right. And I want to speak
own
to
own your shit either. Sometimes, man. Like, own your shit. It's the one thing I cannot stand about prosecutors that just, we're human. We're all human. We right. all make mistakes. We all fuck up. All of us do. Every step. And that includes in your job. That includes sometimes you prosecute the wrong people.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no shame in admitting. As a matter of fact, I have a hell of a lot more respect for a prosecutor that can say, you know what, we got it wrong, and yeah. I want to get it right for the families. I want to get it right.
Yeah, and that's what it's about, is the victims. And I want to speak to real briefly to the people, because this is gonna stir up the whole all the usual suspects on both sides that are gonna start all these fights and arguments online. And I'll just say this. I've made clear my bias at this point. I did not go into this case with a bias. I didn't know shit about this case when I started it. After years of investigating it, I've determined in my mind, I believe they're innocent, and I want to find out who did it. And full disclosure, most people know this. Over these years, I consider Damien Echols a friend, a good friend at this point. So don't look to
You're
me.
An advocate.
Yeah. Don't look to me to be a neutral, unbiased person. I'm not. But this is what I'll say. It doesn't fucking matter at this point. What I learned in the years of investigating this case is not going to be solved because of a witness that we find. Everybody's too dug deep. If someone comes out and says, I know who did it, it was him, half the people won't believe it. It doesn't. Right. None of it's going to matter. So your opinion, my opinion, everybody on social media's opinion of this case no longer matters. The only thing that matters, the conclusion that we came to through the filming of the docuseries with all the experts, with everything we found, is that it's going to take science to solve this case. And that's where we're at now. So at this point, we should all be sitting back and saying, okay, let's get this testing done and let's just find out. Somebody's right and somebody's wrong, and that's going to be okay. There's no reason. The idea that people are still arguing about what they think happened here is
it's outrageous. Ridiculous.
It's stupid. You can't.
In a lot of high profile cases right now, you know, people are taking different sides to things and like, well, you know, they're making just like ridiculous legal arguments. It's not even supported. Like, how do they even come up with that? And people get so divisive. And that's why Bob and I were talking about how here you've got two very smart Supreme Court justices who are interpreting the same statute clearly differently to the extreme ends, and each saying that the other's like absolutely wrong. And it's just more to say to people, you don't have to see everything as like, oh, that's like an intentional thing. You see how they're definitely like misinterpreting it. They're doing this, they're doing that. You know, it could just be like in this situation, two, you know, completely different, you know, opinions of what the statute is. And not to say like, even the people who think that maybe Damien is guilty, they still don't need to think, well, he's bringing motions that are worthless. They don't have any, you know. Obviously here the courts ruled the other way, but if it had been, you know, flipped and you see one judge saying, well, no, this was perfectly fine. And the others being like, well, no, it's not like he was, you know, doing something out of, you know, that was not supported by the law or that people need to take as a.
Yeah. It wasn't frivolous. It was never frivolous.
Clearly the Supreme Court granted it. I'm just saying as like an example of how, you know, two things can be. But on the other side, on the flip side, I want to read something that the state said in the 2010 motion that the Supreme Court of Arkansas commented on. So now again, he was trying to get his new trial. They were all trying to get their new trial based on the DNA excluding them as contributors to the DNA. So it's basically in that argument. And then it says that the state indicates in a footnote to its brief that it, quote, believes that the forum the statute provides, which is for DNA testing and a new trial as a result, may well never yield relief due to confidence that the Arkansas criminal justice system does not convict the innocent. So the court actually said that the court's not going to interpret the statute to yield.
We hope. They should have said, we don't convict the innocent, we hope.
Right.
I just want to make sure that everybody who's only listening, could you guys hear my eye roll? I didn't know if you could hear it.
It was audible.
Yeah, right.
The Supreme Court said, well, we're going to decline the invitation to interpret a statute and yield an absurd result. But that's the kind of digging in that, you know, and obviously we are defense attorneys. So in this case, it is digging in by the state, but it's that kind of digging in by the state that keeps something like this where they've got evidence that points to someone else and they just refuse, not only refuse to test it or investigate it, but even fight tooth and nail to keep it from being tested. So, you know, I really do hope that you're the new DA. By the way, you said she got in when? Is she not responsible for any of the briefing or arguing?
She was elected in the fall of 22 and took office in January of 23. Our hearing was June of 22. And I believe everything was filed before she took office. I did see someone in the live chat had said that they had actually reached out to her about the case once she took office, and she had essentially told them, you know, she didn't know a whole lot about it yet. She didn't know enough about it to comment it, which, you know, I understand for some people is frustrating, but really for me, I'm like, well, good. If that's true, if she's being honest, that means that she's not maybe dug in on it,
right,
one way or the other, right, yet at this point.
And either way, she would have never commented on a case before the Supreme Court, you know, right, made their ruling.
Yeah, because right, it's like, I mean, how old is she? Do you have an idea? Like, she's not is she an older gal, or is she like seem like she's, you know, 30s, 40s?
I really don't know anything about. I mean, I know when it happened. I know the name, and I hadn't really paid much attention to it because we're just waiting on the Supreme Court. So it was like literally just,
I hope she's new guard, man. I hope she's in her 30s or 40, you know, like completely, like, you know, finally they got a female lead, you know, head prosecutor, elected prosecutor there. And, you know, she's going in to change the vibe. And, you know, I like, to me, you know, and you know as much as I do, Bob.
In the chat, Chris Denton in the chat said she's in her 40s. She's an ex-defense attorney.
All right.
Wow.
Like to hear that. Great. That was super, super great tip there, Chris. Thank you.
So, I mean, I love to hear that. But then on the other side of my mind, I'm like, is she going to overcompensate?
Right. Which we do see. Well, not as much with them going to, you rarely see former defense attorneys going to the prosecutor's office. You see prosecutors come into the defense side, and you see many prosecutors go to the bench. But I like when somebody has the ability to be both. Alice and I are so die in the wool. Like we're so hardcore. We like, neither of us could have ever been a prosecutor. Just not in our DNA. We're just very defense oriented. We like to try to fight for those who don't have a voice. And it's just like, I can't prosecute people. I'm not a government guy. You know what I'm saying? It's just not like my dad was a defense attorney. So whatever. But what I was going to say, Bob, is that, you know, the thing about the law is that when you have people, like the expectation for judges is to make a ruling that makes it seem black or white, but it butts up against the actuality of the laws. It's all in the grays. There is a, like in cases where we see evidence and it's all circumstantial, no one really knows. The victims aren't here to tell the tale. If you've got perps, they're not going to tell the tale. And if they got the wrong guy, he certainly can't tell the tale because he wasn't there, you know? So it's like, you've got sides fighting over theories, and it goes to even the people involved in the cases beyond just the social media and, you know, in the online world where they don't know and everybody's arguing. And so like I always say it. I'm like, Alice and I have tried cases, heard all the evidence, defended the damn case, and I still don't know. Because we don't have, like, it's not movies. It's like, you have to tell us where your lawyers tell us to, you know, you got to tell us. We don't ask. I don't need to. It doesn't affect right. what our job is in terms of defending our client and making sure that they're getting a fair trial and they're understanding their rights and that the cops did the job right and all that stuff. That, like, that's not affected by whether or not the person committed the crime or not. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm going to see what the evidence is. Typically, if it's powerful evidence, I'm going to say, hey, we may want to talk about pleading this thing out because they got some powerful evidence against you. And I know what you're saying to me. Like, I didn't do this shit. Well, the evidence would suggest otherwise. So it would be smart to maybe talk about pleading this thing out because, you know, this isn't a magic show.
Right.
This isn't like silver tongue bullshit only goes so far, you know, when they have powerful, you know, so it's like, I don't know, man.
And I'm assuming that the possibility of three lawsuits exists, which could also be a factor. But I do want to reiterate that the Supreme Court, the majority opinion, which is really all that matters for now, although we're commenting how they could use that dissent as a roadmap if the circuit court wants to. I think, like we've talked about before, the fact that the Supreme Court keeps coming back the same way on this each and every time, like, nah, go give them the benefit of the doubt. Nope, this is enough. Go. That's going to be something that the new DA is going to take into account, that the Supreme Court, you know, they did not comment in any way similar to the way the dissent did. Not even to say, not in a good way, but also not in a bad way, because a lot of times they say, and nothing that I'm saying is saying that they're going to be able to establish that, you know, reach the standard that they have to going back, you know, some kind of comment one way or the other. So I think that's going to have to play in when they're considering whether they should just allow the testing. And I would also
like what'll happen. Sorry, Allie, if it gets denied, if they go in and Damien's attorneys put up the fight and they say, if we don't have best case scenario happen where the new DA is like, yeah, like I'm joining in on this motion. I think that we should test the evidence. If they go in, they put up the fight and our worst fears are realized and they mirror the language that was in the dissent and they deny it. And then Damien's attorneys are going to appeal it again.
Right.
You know, I like it's easier because when the Supreme Court of any state, which is the law of that land, and in this case, it's Arkansas, mm-hmm. like they are not chomping at the bit, like to get to the kind of the meat of what the issue was here. They wanted to get to the issue of whether or not somebody who is coming in on a habeas has to be incarcerated in order to be able to do it. Like that was the issue that they wanted to resolve and they've resolved it. They didn't want to get to the bigger, they didn't want to make this determination. Like if what they have is enough, they're not willing to go that far because if they rule on it here, that then becomes the law of the land.
Right. I think the state did the same thing, though, because the state didn't raise the issue that the dissent raised about, well, you know what? This should be denied because even if it comes back and we discover DNA of someone else, that doesn't prove his actual innocence. And that doesn't prove that there's a reasonable probability that, you know, that this is material evidence of actual innocence because argument, all the other overwhelming, you know, evidence of guilt, because if the state had raised that at the trial level and then raised it in their brief, the judge would have addressed it. And I think that was also a strategic thing by the state of not wanting the Supreme Court to say, yep, they reached their burden, in the same way that the dissent was like, well, you should deny it anyway because he's a depraved murderer and there's so much evidence of guilt. I think they knew from that 2010 holding where the court's like, there's 50 exhibits here of new stuff about these defendants' innocence that the court just ignored. You can't just ignore that.
Right.
So I think those types of rulings also was a strategic reason for the state not to put the issue directly in front of the Supreme Court either.
And in 2010, they didn't have the technology that we're talking about. That
MBAC didn't exist in 2010.
Right. So, I mean, like, that was not even a thought in their mind. But
no, but they
look, Bob's daughter has her senior prom today, so we're not going to hold him hostage with our law nerd bullshit for too much longer. So, like, the only thing I want to add, there's two things that I wanted to ask you, Bob. One, I agree. The closest that we'll ever get to a definitive answer in this case in terms of who may have done this or who did do it is by getting that, the ligatures and the DNA that can be found in that ligature tested. That, like, the hair of the crime scene doesn't do shit for me. The ligatures, it's a very compelling argument because only the person that would have tied those ligatures, it could only be their DNA. Theoretically, could it be somebody that worked at the rope factory or whatever? Maybe. But the likelihood is that it wouldn't be. You know what I'm saying? So, but what I wanted to ask is, in terms of, does the MVAC, is that the, so they are able to extract the DNA, but do they, what lab does the testing? Do you know?
I believe they will extract it and they'll develop the profile all within the lab we were looking at is Pure Gold Forensics out of California. And they're kind of, I want to try to get back to
Avery. I promise. Allie's been working on something like our Avery coverage. They like, did he do it? See, Allison doesn't know. So, well, I was asking because
he's not finished. Bob's not finished. Oh, the other Bob's not finished.
Sorry.
Yeah, so they you know the process of MVAC, this Pure Gold Forensics, it's you know the idea is they will take apart the knots and then it flushes with like a sterile solution. This is a dumb version, you know, my dumbed down version of it that the way I understand it. And I did get to like watch them do it, but it basically washes it out with this sterile solution and just gets in every nook and cranny and every pore inside there, and then uses a vacuum that sucks it out. And then it goes through this like disc that's like a filter, which so it's taking the place of what would be, you know, a swab, like a Q-tip looking swab where they're wiping the surface to get skin cells off. Yeah. In this case, they're kind of blasting all those pores, getting it all into a mixture, sucking it through this disc that becomes the swab. And the nice part about that, the discs are, at least the ones I saw, were, you know, about the size of like a 50-cent piece, even a little bigger than that. And then it collects so much, 200 times more DNA than a swab. And then they'll cut it into thirds or quarters and they'll just take one so they can still preserve a majority of it. And then they'll extract the DNA from there. And that, and what you were mentioning as far as like testing in the ligatures, you're right. So that, you know, when they found the hair that was consistent with Terry Hobbs in the ligature, there's an argument to be made there. And there's an argument the state made, which is, well, two of the boys were in his house. They could have picked it up. I've never bought that argument only because, you know, I feel like what was missed and was never like really articulated was these shoelaces were on the boys' shoes, which means since those boys were in that house, those laces were untied, pulled through every eyelet of those shoes, and then retied, and the hair ends up in the middle of the new knot. So as unlikely as that was transferred, it's possible. But what our DNA expert, I believe, would be testifying to in this case is, look, we've got 12 knots. If you find a skin cell on a knot or a hair on a knot from the house of one of the victims, okay, make the argument. If you find the same person's, you know, high volume of skin cells inside every single one of those 12 knots came from three different victims, three different pairs of shoes, one of whom was not in the house. You know, if you take actually, I guess at some point, all three of them were in that house at some point. But we're in Stevie Branch's house regarding the hair. We don't know what we're going to find as far as skin cells. But yeah, at that point, like, it's very hard to make the argument that just that person's skin cells ended up in the middle of 12 different knots.
Right.
You know, so
pretty strong circumstantial evidence, man.
Yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't want it to be my DNA in those knots. You know what I'm saying? Like, because it's very powerful evidence that, you know, that's the killer or one of
them. It will likely be there. And back to your point earlier, like the people that are continuing to fight and argue about this, like they're arguing matters. You know, I'm talking about on social media. Who's the one person who knows better than anybody, because he's been there and has talked to this expert and knows how this is going to work, the person that knows better than anybody that the killer's DNA will almost certainly be in those knots, who's the one person that is insisting that we test the fucking evidence and right. find out whose DNA is in that knot? This is Damien Engel.
Right.
And with that, I do want to, as Bob mentioned, I might have to circle you guys back on our follow-up episode. As Bob mentioned, it is 3:14 p.m. right now on Saturday. My daughter's senior prom is
today. Don't do family shit, Bob.
Yeah. So not only that, but if you guys hear some, you know, loud breaths and banging mics and stuff, it's because I'm not editing shit on this episode. I don't have time because it's going out tomorrow morning. I want to thank you guys both so much for joining us in your interpretation. And if either of you are available on Tuesday night, we may have you come on and help answer more questions on our follow-up. I do want to leave before I close. I just want to say this. I talked to Damien quite a bit since his ruling came out. And first of all, he wanted me to express his thanks and his appreciation to all of you who have continued this fight. Oh, this chokes me up every time. I'll just say this. Damien wanted me to relay how important it is to him that you guys have kept this fight alive. And so he wanted to express his thanks. I also want to tell you too that so part of my job, besides the podcast here, is a documentarian. I want to tell you guys this. This is very hard on him. Very. I'm going to tell you the exact words that Damien said to me. Like, he is full force. He said from the beginning of this that he's doing this fight because he wants to prove, not only clear his name, but prove who killed Stevie, Michael, and Christopher and put an end to it. The thing he said to me today that got me, he said he doesn't want to be famous anymore. The idea of being on, you know, his face on TV, that's why he's not here today. I didn't even ask him to be on here today. You know, he wanted me to express his thanks. But he's trying to go live his life. He's worked real hard for these 13 years since he's been out to create a life that doesn't have anything to do with murder and all this stuff. So just know that if you don't see him and he's not talking, it's not because he's not appreciative. He wanted to make sure I express that. And the last thing that I want to say is, as far as, you know, I made a promise to him without asking you all a long time ago that if this DNA gets approved, that our audience will pay for it and we will come up with that money. I assured him today again that that is absolutely the case. I just want you guys to know there have been some parties that have reached out that have connected the case that have said, hey, we've got it. And so we have a backstop. But as weird as this sounds, for anybody that's not just super excited to help fund the DNA testing, you may not get this. But for those of the people that I am talking to right now, you know exactly what I'm saying. I'm not going to not give you the opportunity to be a part of this. So when it comes time to do the DNA testing, the opportunity will be available for you to donate and be a part of what's going to finally put this case hopefully to an end after all these years. And with that being said, if you see any fundraising out there for this case that you don't see either me or Damien posting, it's not money that's going directly to their case. And there's been some stuff that's been out there already. So I just wanted to make clear on that. Damien nor Truth and Justice have put out fundraising items yet. So we don't want to collect a bunch of your money before we know if there's going to be testing or not. So, but once we do, it'll be out there. So be on the lookout for that. Just don't, if you think you're donating to him, if it hasn't come from something I posted or Damien posted, it's not legit. And with that, I'm going to wipe my tears, go take pictures of my daughter and her boyfriend before they go to their last prom. Bob, Allison, thank you guys to the moon so much for joining us.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of createdintandem.com design, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kay Woodyomnik, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod, and I can be found on social media @BobRuffTruth. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.